Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, the Catholic Church, and many different cultures. Today, my visitor is Lisa Eyer. Lisa, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Thank you very much.
Lisa Eyer is the founder of Lisa's Healthy Food Limited and has received many awards for her work and achievements with her business that she started as a mother of three in her kitchen. Since Lisa has sold the business, she's been involved in a number of projects, including writing articles and public speaking. Her vision and passion are about the creation of a sustainable, peaceful world. Lisa, you have set up a business from scratch. In one of the articles I read about you, it said that you managed to change people's eating behavior in New Zealand and introduced eating hummus in the country. Is this true?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it, isn't it? Just first, I'll correct you on one thing. Lisa's Healthy Food is the name that the company that bought Lisa's actually had. So our company was Airco Limited. That's my surname, Air. Airco Limited, and Lisa's Hummus was the brand. But yes, essentially, I was the founder of that and sold it about 10 or 12 years ago. And I don't think that there was a lot of different ethnic food in New Zealand at the time. It was kind of new. There were a few Middle Eastern takeaways. You could get kebabs, you know, but not an awful lot of different... Oh, and Chinese food, of course, has been here for yonks. But yes, I think probably bringing it into the supermarket rather than restaurants might be where I made a difference. But that actually wasn't my intention. My intention was healthy food.
So you knew hummus from Europe or from the Arab world, and you brought it into New Zealand as a healthy food.
Yes, not from Europe. I was married to a Turk, so we part-owned a Middle Eastern restaurant called Midnight Express. And, of course, they served hummus there, and we had my son's third birthday party there. And so... Well, my children loved it. So I thought, oh, well, I better find out how to make it. So I said to my husband, you know, get the recipe. He brought me back an ingredient list. And I said, well, what about a recipe? And he said, well, there doesn't seem to be one. So I made it up as I went along, and it suited my taste as a Kiwi taste rather than perhaps a Middle Eastern taste.
And it suited your son's taste.
Yes, definitely. So it was a great snack for kids coming home from school. Instead of giving them something sweet, you could give them hummus with carrot sticks and celery and things like that. So I was doing that really to start with before I ever made a business.
So that's great. You were not just complaining that there was not a variety of food. You brought something into the New Zealand food market.
Essentially, yes.
And would you consider this introduction of hummus to the New Zealand market as a step forward to a healthy society in New Zealand?
Well, it was one of many steps, I'm sure, that lots and lots of people have been doing. But yes, it certainly helped.
I think that if you want to do a change in society, you have to start with a step. And if many people do a step, then we'll get forward.
Well, I guess so. Yes, every little bit counts.
Yes. Mm. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Lisa Eyer. She's just told us about her brand, Lisa's Hummus, that she has, and she's now very much involved in social justice, not so much in the hummus anymore.
Not at all in hummus. I buy it from the supermarket, just like anyone else.
And so you are involved in social justice, and you say that you are a spiritual person. What do you mean with this?
Well, I wouldn't say I was a spiritual person. I'd say everybody is, actually. But I'm interested in spirituality. And I'm interested in the different ways that people express that. For some people, it's religion. For some people, it's meditation. There's all sorts of different ways to feel connected to, some people would say God. Some people freak out if you say the word God, connected to the universe, they might prefer. But however one describes it in words, it's still essentially that same essence of goodness. And I was brought up as a Quaker, and there's two sorts of Quakers that you hear about. The ones, some in America, sort of Shakers, very, very evangelical. I'm not connected with that. But the run-of-the-mill Quakers and the ones we have in New Zealand, basically the essential philosophy is that there's that of God or good in every person. So if you go around with that philosophy, then you see the world differently, I think.
I'm interested that you say that you're a Quaker, because on the 12th of December we just celebrated Foundation Day for the Mercy Sisters, and the foundress of the Sisters of Mercy was Catherine McCauley, and she spent 20 years with Quakers and got very close to the Quaker spirituality.
Right, right.
And she was involved in social justice. That's what the Sisters of Mercy are still doing.
That's
social
wonderful.
Social justice and education.
Yes, yes, that's really wonderful. Because how can you be a spiritual person and a compassionate person if you turn a blind eye to, well, it's the story of the Samaritan, isn't it?
Yes, yes, and the works of mercy.
Yes.
Yeah. And so the spirituality, what you say, is also reminds me of what we just last week we had, the week before we had a lady, Ruth Cleaver, who came here, the president of the Auckland Interfaith Council. And she was talking about how we get different faiths and religions to talk to each other. And I think that you're also building bridges, the way that you're thinking about a spirituality in that field. And that
I probably am. My mother was on the Interfaith Council. Because I'm not involved, actually. I'm not actually involved in Quakers. I'm not involved in any religion. I'm a little bit... nobody can organise me, so I'm a law unto myself, maybe. But I'm concerned sometimes about religion. And so I tend to walk my own path, but I'm into respecting all the different religions for their different aspects, positive aspects, really.
And you're definitely a person who doesn't say, well, that's too high for me, or I'm not going there. You are quite adventurous, aren't you? You started your own business, and then you created something that you call the healing business, and which is meant to create ethical, sustainable, inspirational, and creative businesses. And then I read that you quoted Gandhi saying, "Be the change we want to see in the world."
Yes.
Can you tell us more about this this idea?
Oh, well, the healing business didn't last for very long because the landlord put the rent up and we weren't big enough to sustain that, so I walked away. But after I sold the business, for about 7 years, I ran with a man called Tony Minervino and initially another man, Tony Knight. We had this group called The Forum, and it was not the Landmark Forum, different. And on a Friday night, we had speakers come and they would talk about either complementary health or alternative spirituality that you wouldn't hear about elsewhere. And they were very successful, actually, and they connected a lot of people in the slightly more alternative field. So we basically became redundant after about 7 years.
But you've done your part.
Yeah, we did what we needed to do at the time. And out of that, Tony Minervino and I started this healing business. It was also a crystal shop. We were selling crystals. But we were trying to assist people in business to bring the best out of themselves into their businesses. It was a good idea, but I think it was a little bit too advanced for what business was ready for just at the time. It's probably actually ready for that now, but I'm not.
And we mentioned that you are involved in social justice issues and topics that are of concern in today's society. Can you give us an example?
Oh, well, there's a lot of things where I speak out about poverty, and I very much supported Matiria Touré in what she said. I think that she took far too big a risk in what she said to people about how it was being on the benefit. But actually, in the 90s, I was on the benefit at the same time as her, and it was impossible to manage. And it's pretty much impossible to manage now. So I do speak out about beneficiaries not being able to manage. What is the point in having a benefit that isn't enough, so people then have to break the law in order to survive? It really is insane. So I'm glad that there's some hope now that things will improve. I have interviewed, because I interview people on this radio station, on Green Planet FM, I've interviewed people from various different, the Child Poverty Action Group and a few other organisations that escape me at the moment, to try and get the message out that really, when we're just nice, comfortable, middle-class people, we don't really realise how the other half live. And, of course, I saw a little bit of that as a primary school teacher as well, that how it is for some children.
And what do you think? Is it the material? Is it the shortage of money? Or is it something, is there any common thread?
The common thread is that there is not enough money, the benefits are not enough, and also the minimum wage is not enough. So if people are provided with not enough, then all sorts of other things happen. Crime will happen, and a feeling of anger is there, and it really doesn't help society all pull together. So we really have to make sure that the rich perhaps are not quite so rich and the poor are not so poor. We need to pull things together a bit more reasonably in society.
So are you trying to create awareness, or in which way are you working?
Very much so. I mean, I speak out about it when I give public talks. I do quite a bit on Facebook, publicising things. But I feel that maybe my influence is being curtailed, perhaps lately, on Facebook. So I might have to find some other ways of doing things. But I think building awareness, and I have a group, of course, called the Awareness Party as well, but building awareness is very much what we need to do, and then bring solutions in. So there's no good moaning and not bringing in any solutions.
Do you also belong to part of, there are some groups that support beneficiaries with their applications for the benefit? And I think that you mentioned the Child Action Poverty.
Child Poverty Action Group. Yes, no, they do that. So, I've got my finger in a lot of pies, you know, so
So what other pie is there?
Well, there's genetic engineering. I have been very outspoken over the last 17 years about genetic engineering being not healthy for people. I don't believe there have been enough tests done. After all, our stomachs are full of these sort of microbes and things that break down food. And have they really tested that these crops that they're providing us with different genes from what would naturally grow in the natural world, and then we eat these things, and then we wonder perhaps why there are so many cancers and other aspects of ill health. I also am very concerned that they could spread and destroy other crops, so that the natural crops then would be taken over. So there's a lot of things about it escaping into the environment and what it does to our bodies when we're eating. I'm really quite concerned about. Science is great. I'm not anti-science, but it has to be tested over time. And I think as humans, it's a human failing, not a scientific failing, that we try and rush things. Oh, this is going to make money, or oh, this is going to cure the ills of the world, and we rush around and do it and haven't given time.
It's that reminds me of this super crop of rice that was invented and then was used in the Philippines or in countries where there's a lot of rice plantations, and then they found out that that it's it might be a very it's a great sort of rice, but if you have only one sort of rice and you have a catastrophe, a natural catastrophe, you lose everything. Whereas the natural, the traditional way of having different sorts of rice that would keep some, even if you have like too much water, too little water, or a storm. So, because if you have just a monoculture with one sort.
Yes, you'd think that we could have learned about it from the Irish potato famine, but we didn't. But, I mean, we need to have many sorts of seeds, and we haven't. Big agriculture is relying on, you know, one sort a lot. And so people are saving heritage seeds, which is fantastic. It's really important that this happens, because we could be in a big mess with climate change and instability as it is, where we could get floods, we can get, you know, extreme heat and drought. And we never know what we're going to get at the moment, especially in America, I think. So it's really, really very important to have a variety of crops. And the other thing that concerns me is the chemicals that are tipped onto the genetically engineered crops. And most of the time that is Roundup, which is a glyphosate base, and there's a lot of testing done to say that glyphosate isn't really safe. But Roundup is even worse because of the adjuvants that they add. So we've got this ghastly chemical going around that was originally associated with genetic engineering that's now everywhere, and it's traces of it in people's bodies and in the streams in New Zealand, everywhere. And it's an endocrine disruptor. It's not good for us at all. And the WHO have said that it's, you know, probably carcinogenic. But the problem is still sold here.
The problem is that it takes maybe two generations in order to find out what happened.
That's the same thing again. Yes, it takes time. But they're knowing that it's killing rats. And so if it's killing rats, it is logically going to kill us eventually. So, I think it's really important that we look at how our food is grown and developed and how it gets to us and what's good for us. I would like to see it all being organic.
When I consider that you have been in the health and the food sector, do you still have some influence there?
I don't think I have any influence, no, but I certainly... Well, I speak out about it. I mean, you know, food is an interest of mine. And so to have good, healthy, natural food, I mean, not too much sugar, not too much salt, and then things grown without chemicals, and a variety, yes. And, of course, going back to the poverty, of course, the poor people can't afford all that sort of food.
The most expensive, you mean the food that is genetically manipulated, or the natural food?
I'm meaning the natural food. No, we don't grow genetically engineered food here in New Zealand, fortunately, but it started to be imported. We've got some genetically engineered potatoes now being imported. So if you go to the fish and chip shop and buy them, or have them at a restaurant, it's most likely where you're going to be eating genetically engineered potatoes.
And the organic shops, where you hope that everything is all right with what is on the label, they are more expensive.
They are. And actually the price will come down if people keep buying them. And they'll also be fresher, because sometimes they look a little bit sad because they've been sitting there. And it's all about cost. But I don't think we can give the growers any less, but sometimes the middleman could take a bit less out of that. And the more we buy, the cheaper it'll be.
Yeah, I think that in Europe they have done a lot of progress in the last 20 years regarding organically grown ingredients already. Because people want to know what is on the label, and the label has to be correct, and then they are more conscious of what they're buying.
Yes, we've got to do something about labelling in New Zealand. It's not good enough.
But it's getting there.
Hopefully.
So we talked about the poverty, and we talked about the genetically modified or genetically engineered food. And so you have, as you say, you have your finger in different pots and trying to create awareness. And you're also writing about these issues?
I do sometimes, yes. Actually, I also write about spiritual topics as well. But another one of the practical things that I'm involved in is opposing the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, the TPPA, which now has been given the very fancy name, which I've got to remember, the CPTPP. Something progressive. I forget the C at the moment. I should have checked up on that. But
is it
anyway,
a contract or something?
It is the TPP, essentially. They've just given it another name to make Canada feel more comfortable, because I think President Trudeau was not supposed to sign it. So they made a few changes, but there's still the very concerning aspect, which is the ISDS, the Investor States Dispute Settlements, which will mean that a corporation that's operating in New Zealand could sue our government if our government changed its attitude to that company. For example, at the moment we have fracking in Taranaki, fracking for oil, which I think is horrendous. Now, if enough people stood up against that and said to the government no, and the government said, okay, we'll get rid of all fracking in New Zealand because it causes earthquakes, essentially the fracking companies could turn around and under the TPP and say, well, we want compensation for lost profit. So that takes away democracy in New Zealand. So we still have to oppose that. The new government is telling us it's not as bad as it was with the previous government, but it's still not okay. And so we're going to have to begin an education program on what are the things that are still not okay and let people know. And then we need people out on the streets just the same as we had a year or so ago in protest, and letters to newspapers, letters to politicians. We need to make one almighty fuss.
I remember that last time when there was a protest against, which it's a strange word, protest against, but there was a march against the TPPA, and there was even one of the Catholic bishops participating in it.
Right, yes. Well, I mean, it's important. And yes, I don't like the word protest at all. In fact, I organised a march for peace the November before last, and TV3 put me on the telly as a protester, and I said, no, this is a march for peace. It was when the warships were here, because I also work on peace issues, and I'm on the committee of the West Auckland Peace Group as well.
Protest means to testify for something, so it's protest. And so it's a bit strange that you have the word protest against, because that's a contradictory sentence.
It is, really, yes. So so there's a lot of things where people need to speak out, and our younger people tend to be not so interested as I'd like to see, but then they're having to work perhaps to put themselves through education, and then there's the ones with children, and I mean that's a massive commitment. So it isn't till you get a bit older, like me, that you've actually got time to do something.
But then some people retire and don't want to see anything anymore.
Well, that's a great shame, because that's when you're retired is the time that you can have fun and do a lot of interesting things. I must say, I think tired is the operative word, because I do an awful lot and then I get tired.
Well, I've met some older people who say, well, once I've retired, I could do everything what I liked. I could speak out without any problem. So I think that if retired people who don't have anything to lose, like when you say the young people, they are building up their career and they are very busy with education. But once you're retired, then you can think about, yeah, what can I do in order to make this society a little bit better? Like what you said, one step at a time.
That's right. And I mean, every step, you know, is the first step in a 1,000-mile journey, you know, but it's important. So whatever I'm doing, if it's the first step, it is, you know. But if we can help to make the world a better place, I mean, I have grandchildren, you know, and I think, well, what am I bringing my grandchildren in, you know, into this world that there's climate change, there's the threat of nuclear war, there's all these dreadful things,
Was it like what Catherine McCauley did when she was a young woman and inherited so much money? She could have just traveled or done whatever she wanted to do. But she built a house for the poor and educated young girls and helped people who were sick. And it's just, she did her part in Dublin. And there were others who did similar deeds in other parts of the world. And I think without all these people who stood up and did something the way that they could do it, I think that society would be a lot worse. The world would be a lot worse.
Yes. Well, that be the change that you want to see in the world, which was Gandhi's saying. It's very appropriate.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I understand that you're also a singer.
Yes, I've been singing with Auckland Choral Society since 1974, really? Bar a couple of years. And so next year, I think, is... Oh, no, I've got to get this right. 100 Hallelujahs. There's a big thing about the Messiah next year. But this year, we're still performing the Messiah on December the 18th and 19th, Monday and Tuesday, at the Town Hall. And it's a wonderful yearly event. I've actually performed it more than 80 times. I've lost count how many times I've performed it. And every time, it's wonderful. And, of course, Auckland Choral knows it very well. So, and our conductor always gets the best out of us. So it'll be a great thing. So, yes, if you Google Auckland Choral Messiah, you can get tickets online.
So and you're not only giving your voice to social justice issues, but also to the Messiah.
Well, it's the Christmas story. I mean, a lot of people want to hear the Christmas story sung like that. It's done really beautifully. I mean, Handel's music is stunning anyway.
Yeah.
And,
Thank you.
So that's when you hear the Hallelujah chorus in all its glory.
Yes. Oh, that's really good. Thank you very much for sharing this.
That's all right.
Thank you for coming here to the studio and talking about your commitments and your engagement and your work. And thank you for not being tired of being retired. And just quickly to our listeners about our program booklets. We have the 2018 program booklets, and I hope that you've all received your personal copy. If not, and you'd like to have one, please come and stop by at our center or send us an email and we'll send you a copy. Our theme for 2018 is connectedness, and we're looking forward to connecting people, cultures, beliefs, anything to make this world a better place and to also feel better. It's a center for well-being, also education and well-being. To give you a glimpse of what's coming up in the new year, we have scheduled the German singers Trio Adue to come on Saturday, the 24th of February, to facilitate a workshop on Singing is Like the Air You Breathe, a connectedness for body, soul and mind. This event will take place at St. Mary's Historic Chapel in Ponsonby. And on the 27th of February, from 7 to 9, Rangi Davis will come and give a presentation on reconnecting broken connection using one Te Ao Māori approach of whakawhanaungatanga and hoorongo. This might sound a bit complicated if you don't speak Māori, but the presentation will be in English and we will certainly find a wonderful sense of connectedness on that evening. Even though we've just entered the Advent season, I would like to draw your attention to our Lenten talks with Father Stuart Seller. In 2017, he gave an excellent series of 4 Lenten talks. In 2018, he will give an enhanced presentation of the same topic with 1 more session. This time, all sessions will take place in the evening. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at 09 for Auckland 638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. And I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. And thank you very much, Lisa, for having come to the studio.
Thank you for having me.